by my count, South Main has two remaining World War II veterans alive, Cliff Brunson and Albert Perk Perkins. Tom Brokaw called the generation that fought World War II the greatest generation that any society has ever produced. Demographers also refer to that generation as the Builder Generation. Not only did they win the war against fascism, that was only the beginning of their contribution. Ask any soldier or sailor, and they will tell you that armies and navies do not make peace. Armies can invade and conquer and liberate and occupy. Navies project and protect power. You can win the war and declare a cessation of hostilities, but that's not the same thing as finding peace. Peace, like war, is waged. And the generation that fought World War II came home and waged and won the peace because they had seen enough of war. Jim Mars, whom we remember today, told the story of his service that at the end of the war, his ship in the Pacific Fleet was sent into Hiroshima Bay only days after the bombing. Their assignment was to count the Japanese naval vessels that had been sunk by the bomb. You could look through the clear water of the harbor and see them below. They came in and made port, and their captain made a surprise announcement. The ship's company was divided into two crews, starboard and port. And he said each of those watches would be afforded the opportunity to walk through the city. Jim's watch came, and he and shipmates walked away from the harbor and through the ruins of Hiroshima only days after it had been bombed. He said, everywhere you looked, everything was gray and dusty. There was nothing green anywhere. They saw a building, the walls of which had been blown out, but the staircase was still intact. And so he and his shipmates went and climbed up to the third floor of this building where they could survey the city. And he said the devastation and destruction of that place was total and complete. Making their way back to the ship, they passed groups of civilians who did not look them in the eye, who did not call out to them, who tried to ignore that they were there. Jim said, I thought they would be angry. If there were Japanese sailors walking around in my native Galveston, I'd have been mad. But they just look broken and beaten. It was a sad tale for a young man from Texas. Life and death look different when you have seen the power of each of them up close. And those who came home from serving came home different people than when they left. Jim, like so many others, committed his life to building a better world. As Jesus taught us to pray, to bring the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. They came back and resolved themselves to lead quiet lives and to earn the respect of others. They routinely spent their entire careers working for one company. They built an economy that is the rival of every nation in the world. And this church was formed and built by that generation. The building was here. And Herman Westmoreland during the war said, after the war, the world will need a church worthy of the gospel. So they came and they built a church worthy of the gospel. They invested their lives in deep and abiding friendships. It wasn't just that they came to church. They were church. When the Apostle Paul wrote his first letter to the church in Corinth, in the very first chapter, he said to them in the 18th verse, the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is Christ, the very power of God. The world will tell you it is foolish to give your money away. It is foolish to spend nights away from home studying a word that's 2,000 years old. It is foolish to turn strangers into family when all you have in common is Jesus. But we who are being saved have discovered that these things are the very power of God. That it is in giving that we receive. That word is living and active, sharper than every double-edged sword. That we have been grafted into a family that lasts forever. And I have a secret for you. This world will pass away. And what this world calls foolish, we have found to be the very power of God. The DNA of this church and our fellowship together came when that generation came back from the war and began to bring the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. They gave themselves to the church. They studied together. They ate together in their homes with glad and sincere hearts. They funded world missions and founded domestic ministries. And they did that not just on Sundays and Wednesdays, but all the days. They made the church the very center of their lives. They waged peace. And when we gather in this place on Sundays, our Sunday school fellowship and our gathering in worship are more powerful for relationships that were forged in deep, deep ways. By a Baylor Bridge Club that met on the first Friday of every month, Paul and Mary Cole, Vernon and Yvonne Garrett, Bubba and Martha Gale, Dwayne and Lois Geis, James and Dorothy Griffin, John and Velma Huggins, Jim and Margie Mars. You know, bridge is just an excuse to get to see each other in each other's homes. And they would go and they would play and they would stay into the night. And the kids just began sleeping over wherever they played. And that group became an extended family. They met together for over 45 years without a death or a divorce in their circle. They played bridge together for 57 years with a quarter club, so named because it met on the first Friday of every quarter. Dorothy and Cliff Chandler, Bill and Carla Everett, Bob and Kitty Horton, Sam and Betty Phelps, Charles and Catherine Wilson, and they met on the first Friday of every quarter without fail for more than 50 years. With the Bridge Group, Jim and Anna Faye Barkley, Harold and Billy Selke, Ray and Pat Kalmus, Buddy and Betty Hudson. Their children learned to like each other because they were going to have forced fun together. And they just grew to be a family. And for 30 years, there was a party club, Liston and Dodie Beasley, Paul and Mary Cole, Hazel and Harry Chavon, Dolph and Mary Kerb, Vernon and Yvonne Garrett, Dwayne and Lois Geis, Frank and Jeanette Hurd, Howard and Sarah Lee, Phil and Jean Cordell, Jean and Francis White. Their names familiar in our mouths as household words. They shared their lives together. They made time for one another. They listened to one another, and that shapes us. In the early 1970s, four couples from this church went away to Austin for a golf weekend. Frank and Jeanette Hurd, Paul and Mary Cole, Marshall and Mary Nell Geddes, Harold and Billy Selke. And they got to Austin, and it just rained like the dickens. So the wives decided this was a perfect day to go shopping. And the husbands were left together sharing a long breakfast. And though they had been friends for years, classically in the way of that generation who did not speak of their service, these four friends had never spoken of their service, even when the war had been won years ago. It took time and trust to find peace. And for the first time in more than 30 years, these four men began to share their stories. Frank Hurd was in the Counterintelligence Command in the United States during the war. He brought down a German spy ring. He guarded Eleanor Roosevelt for a week. And as the war was drawing to a close, he was called to a duty station on the West Coast and put on a boat with no notice of where they were going or how long they would be there. They realized there were 30 such men, and so they began to interview each other and figured out they were all lawyers. And one of them said, "It's a war crimes trial." And sure enough, they were shipped off to Japan. And when they arrived, they numbered off 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. And the ones were prosecutors and the twos were defense lawyers. And they prosecuted war crimes. Paul Cole had been a B-24 pilot. He flew 50 missions out of Italy over the Pulaski airfields in Romania. Marshal Geddes and Frank Selke had been in the 7th Fleet in the Pacific, though on different ships. They had been off the coast of Okinawa, and they were both under the same kamikaze attack on the same day, though neither of them knew it until these 30 years later. Marshall said he watched a bomb drop 50 feet from the ship's deck on which he was standing and fall into the ocean. Frank said that he saw, Harold said that he saw a Japanese kamikaze pilot fly his plane into the deck of the ship next to them. They had known each other for years, and they had shared bridge and Bible study and Baptist life. But each of them had set out to lead a quiet life and to win the respect of others, to trust in the Lord with all their hearts and to follow Him in all of His way. Harold Selke was the last of those four to die this year. Now each of them has faithfully and successfully completed his mission. Their lives are extraordinary. And can I tell you, it has been my experience that every life is extraordinary if you take the time to listen. And while that conversation in Austin was uncommon because of its content, the trip itself was not. And if we were going to learn only one lesson from that generation, could I suggest we start with this one? Life is the most precious commodity in your portfolio. Spend it wisely. Spend it wisely on and with people who will bless you, who will shape you, who will make your faith stronger and deeper because of your ties together. Wage peace. I believe the pattern to the brightest days in the future of our church has already been set in the richness of its past. There are people sitting around you in this room today who will bless your life and shape your faith if only you will do the work, spending the time and listening to their story and sharing yours and discovering God's grace and His peace in your midst. Well,